The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels heading up until 2 o'clock. Let's talk with Adam Teicher, ESPN Chiefs Insider, presented by Twin Peaks. Step up your lunch game at Twin Peaks. Enjoy light yet hearty combos put together for you, available at an awesome price, featuring savory soups, crisp salads, and a variety of sandwiches to satisfy your every craving. Enjoy your next lunch break with Twin Peaks. Adam Teicher joining us here in the Zone. Adam, what's up? How are you, sir?
Good, Jason. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. Adam, does it bother you that the Big Ten has been on this this national championship drought, or are you good with the drought just so long as it continues to be Michigan State as the last Big Ten team to win one?
Yeah, they're like the 72 Dolphins, right? They can pop the champagne anytime the last Big Ten champion or the last Big Ten team loses in the tournament. So
yeah,
I was rooting for Purdue last night, but it was obvious pretty early it wasn't going to happen. But yeah, it is kind of it's hard to believe that the Big Ten has gone, what, 20, whatever it is
25?
Now, 24 years.
24,
yeah,
24 would be?
Like that.
Yeah,
it's hard to believe the Big Ten's gone that long without winning, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't typically look at the conference superiority based on things like that, but it is one of those random things where Wisconsin's been there, you know, Michigan State's been there, had opportunities. Michigan's played in a national title game. Purdue's played in a national title game. Ohio State's been there. Like, you have seen these teams that have been there. They just happen to lose. Like, you're a couple plays away in certain games from saying, boy, look at all these championships and different teams from the Big Ten. But it hasn't really happened. I don't really look at it and say, well, the Big Ten sucks. There was some of that last night. I'm like, well, the Big Ten drought continues. Are they ever going to win one? Yeah, I think I think the Big Ten will have another champion someday. I think they'll probably have one. They got some good teams there.
As long as it's Michigan State, I'm with you there. But no, you know, some of these games have been kind of lopsided too.
It's true.
You know, they get into the championship game and they're blowouts. They really don't haven't competed very well. So I mean, it's truly kind of a weird phenomenon, no doubt.
Well, I know one that that I watched you know, up close and personal was 2013. And if it wasn't for an amazing four-possession stretch where a dude hit a three each and every time, and Luke Hancock, Michigan was controlling that game against Louisville in 2013.
Yeah.
And then there was a clean block in the second half on Louisville's point guard, Peyton Sieve, at the rim, and it was called a foul. So clean. But it was called a foul and free throws, and it sort of changed some things there. But Michigan was as close as you get to winning a national title. A couple things go differently for them, but it didn't happen. So here we are, and UConn just incredibly dominant, and Purdue gets there, but can't get over the hump for the Big Ten. So, but Michigan State's still the most recent team to win one. We'll see.
So I am enjoying the champagne as we speak.
You should.
Here.
You should enjoy pop that champagne each and every year. Adam Teicher from ESPN is our guest. Mike Dana popping some champagne, I think, with returning to the Chiefs on his multi-year deal. Your reaction to this deal getting done, maybe even the timing of it as well. But what's your reaction to Mike Dana returning to the Chiefs?
Yeah, I thought as the time went on, you know, it sounded things started to get more optimistic from the Chiefs side about him getting a deal done. So, and here it is that it happened, and for some decent money this late in the game. So, you know, I think it worked out for him. It worked out for the Chiefs. I mean, they're going to be bringing back, other than Sneed and Edwards and Willie Gay, am I forgetting anybody? Pretty much everybody who had a. The guys who were leaving.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Everybody's coming back, you know, I think they have a decent shot at doing a lot of the same things they did last year on defense. So, you know, I'm eager to see what the Chiefs add at this point, maybe through the draft, but it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that.
What is it about Mike Dana you think that that the Chiefs like so much? And I like him, too. This isn't a loaded question of, like, why are they signing him? He sucks. But what about, you know, his play, his skill set that the Chiefs covet and want to bring back on a three-year deal, which we'll talk about, you know, Veach draft picks. But to bring back on a three-year deal, give him $13 million guaranteed, what is it about Mike Dana that is the value to the Chiefs?
Can play a lot of different spots. You can line him up in a lot of different places, and he can take care of business for you. You know, he's a steady guy. You know what you're getting from down to down with Mike Dana. I mean, you know, the ceiling is not going to be Chris Jones-like, but the floor is not going to be very low either. You know, he's going to play for you, play in and play out. And, you know, you ask any football coach and they'll tell you that's kind of what they want. They want to know what they're going to get from a guy on a down-to-down basis. And Mike Dana really fits that description. So, you know, I think there's a lot to like there with him. And certainly the Chiefs felt that way as well.
Visiting with Adam Teicher from ESPN. I also wonder, you know, Mike Dana, and the reason I asked that question was to lead into this one of, you know, we see Brett Veach draft picks, and he hasn't had a lot of opportunities to sign his particular draft picks to long-term deals, because you're looking at, you know, the 2018 draft is his first one. So you've got, you know, 3 years worth of draft picks that he could sign to a long-term deal. And this is the first one that he has signed and brought back. 2018, Derek Nnadi was drafted. They've done now 3 consecutive one-year deals with Derek Nnadi. So in a way, they did bring him back on a multi-year contract, but that was a year-by-year. So it wasn't a, hey, you mean this much to us, so we're going to bring you back on a 2 or 3 year deal, whatever. Nick Allegretti, 2019 draft, was brought back last year on a one-year deal. And then this draft class, the Mike Danas and Clyde Edwards-Helaire's in the 2020 draft class. Edwards-Helaire, a one-year deal brought back. And then Dana, 3 years, $24 million. No one Thornhill, Legarius Sneed was traded. Mecole Hardman walked, and then they, you know, traded for him to bring him back. Like, we've seen some of these players, Willie Gay that you talked about. We've seen players that they've drafted that have been good players that they have just simply walked on. What is it about Mike Dana? Is there something particular, specific, position? You mentioned the, you know, he can play some different things, which certainly is a value that's there. But, you know, this is the first guy that Brett Veach has said we're going to give a multi-year deal to with, you know, $13 million of guaranteed money of all of his draft picks, which is interesting because sometimes there's that emotional tie of, no, I'm going to keep this guy around. I drafted him. We scouted him. We developed him. But Mike Dana is the only one so far that we've seen.
Yeah, I think that he sort of is different than basically all those guys you mentioned, other than Legarius Sneed, probably. You know, he does more for the Chiefs than any of those guys that you named. You know, not that some of those guys at least aren't good players, but I think they feel like they're getting more value out of Mike Dana than they did pretty much any one of those other guys, other than probably Legarius Sneed. But as we know, he was going into a different salary stratosphere here that the Chiefs weren't comfortable going in with him. So I think there's your answer right there, that the Chiefs feel differently about Mike Dana than they did about probably most, if not all, of these other guys that we've talked about.
Yeah, my theory was the Chiefs in general aren't necessarily willing to go above and beyond on contracts for a lot of different players. There are certain positions, certain specific players that they will do that. They didn't want to do that with Legarius Sneed. That's why they traded him. But Chris Jones paid some pretty good money. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce not even paid what, you know, typically he would be worth if you look at even the value of tight ends, but still paying him some pretty good money. Juwan Taylor, tackle, paying him some pretty good money. Other than that, they haven't done that with anybody, whether that be free agency or their own draft picks. They wanted to do that with Tyreek Hill, but it got too expensive, so they had to walk on him as well. What to me separates Mike Dana is twofold, and what you talked about there. You got the value of the multiple positions that he can play, so different things he brings to the table that he can fill a couple of different roles, and the value of the money. It doesn't break the bank. It's not a one-year deal. But they're not committing $25, $26 million guaranteed to a player that they're bringing back. And I think that's probably, if we're looking at what's more likely than not moving forward with Brett Veach, probably the pool they'll continue to swim in of, what does this guy do for us? And are we having to pay top dollar to bring him back? If we are, then with Patrick Mahomes and some of these other players, we may need to look at already who the replacements are for this particular player and find somebody else to fill in so we can allocate resources better.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. You know, I think the Chiefs have been, generally speaking, under Brett Veach, more willing to pay outside free agents than they have been their own free agents. And Chris Jones is the obvious exception there. But, you know, you look at guys like going back to Tyrann Mathieu and Sammy Watkins, and then including guys like Joe Tooney and Juwan Taylor, you know, these are guys that the Chiefs really, it was hard to see them paying their own players that kind of money at those positions, but they certainly were comfortable doing it with other people's players. So, you know, Mike Dana certainly was not, that this contract is not at any of those, the level of any of those guys. So, you know, it is a different deal, but I feel like it's more just about the value here. The Chiefs saw a good player, regardless of what team he was on. He just happened to be on their own, and they were very familiar with him, and they feel like he fills a pretty important role for what they want to get done. So I think this is a good move for the Chiefs. I think there's pretty low risk here. They know what they're getting, and they're getting it at a comfortable price.
Yeah, and circumstances sort of dictate, and every situation is different, and you got to take it on an individual basis. All of the cliches we hear when they talk about, you know, a free agency and you know, different things like that. But I do wonder, as this next draft class now is open for extensions, Nick Bolton, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, throw in Noah Gray if you want to, but certainly those three guys, Bolton, Humphrey, and Trey Smith, that can sign extensions and bring those guys back. The one thing that was a criticism, and I'm going to draw bring the Royals into this. One thing that was a criticism to Dayton Moore, Brett Veach, he's going. It's going to be a rebuild for a long time. But one of the criticisms for Brett, Dayton Moore was there was he talked about family and the emotional connection and fans getting to know the players and, you know, what they meant to him personally. You know, those players. And maybe investing too much or willing to not move on a player early enough because there was that connection, right? We won a World Series with these guys. They mean something more than just, you know, how much money or what we can get back in a trade. We haven't seen Brett Veach do that yet. I do wonder, will this draft class be a little different when you're talking about Bolton, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and even the next draft class, which is looked at and viewed as one of the reasons why this team can continue a dynasty of McDuffie and Karlaftis and Brian Cook and Chanel and Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson and Isaiah Pacheco, if there starts to be more of an emotional attachment with Brett Veach for a group of players that helped him win back-to-back, you know, Super Bowls?
Yeah, well, you know, I think you can look at what happened with Legarius Sneed and say there probably won't be that emotional attachment. You know, I feel like, you know, Brett Veach looked at that situation and said, you know what, given the salary we're going to have to pay him, we're probably better off with him playing for another team than we would be if he was playing for ours. And that, you know, might be a cold assessment of what had just happened here. But when you boil it down, that's really what happened here. And so I don't feel like he's that way at all. I mean, Carl Peterson was that way in a lot of respects. No, he never had a championship team to, you know, retain guys from, but, you know, he felt that way about guys like Derek Thomas and certainly Tony Gonzalez and players like that he drafted. But Brett Veach isn't that way. I feel like he'll look at this more in terms of how can this player or these players help us going forward. And, you know, hey, great that they helped us win a championship or two championships, and we'll miss them when they're gone. But we got to do what we got to do here. And, you know, I was wondering whether that was a little bit of what happened with Chris Jones here. When the Chiefs got to, you know, push got to shove and they had to make a decision here, they were like, we don't want to, you know, get rid of a guy who, you know, we really loved and was a great part of three championships teams. But no, it's more, after talking to some people, it's really more about what he can help them do from this point forward than anything else. So I don't see that being part of the equation in any significant way when it comes time to look at guys like Bolton and Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. I think the Chiefs will be a little more, you know, you might not not like the term, but mm-hmm. but cold-blooded in yeah. that regard.
And that's one of the questions I was going to have is, you know, the reason I bring up the fact that Dana is the only draft pick for Brett Veach that's got a multi-year deal, that Mike Dana, three different one-year deals, Allegretti, a one-year deal, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a one-year deal. Nick Bolton, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, when they're free agents, will not be one-year deals. They will get multi-year deals, whether with the yeah. Chiefs or somewhere else. Is there something to take away from Mike Dana? Hey, he did get that three-year deal, but it's a value deal. They're not paying $15 million for Mike Dana. They'd have to pay 20-some-odd million dollars for L'Jarius Sneed, and they moved on. They don't have to pay that for Nick Bolton or Creed Humphrey. I would hope not for Trey Smith, although the guard market has got really stupid this offseason. But is that a prequel to, yeah, if the value's there? And I know they deal with value all the time, but if the value's there with Bolton, Humphrey and Trey Smith, is the only way they bring those guys back, and they're not going to pay top end market for more players outside of Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones, et cetera.
Yeah, well, that's the key here is that, you know, we've talked about this before. The Chiefs, with all of their big name players, have come to a point where they've said, okay, this is as far as we're going to go, and we're not going any farther. And the exception there is Chris Jones. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs went beyond where they were previously willing to go with him. But with Tyreek Hill and Orlando Brown and a bunch of other guys, L'Jarius Sneed among that group, you know, the Chiefs got to that point where they said, okay, we're out. You know, we'll see you down the road. We'll be playing against you, but we are not going to pay you what you're worth. So I think there's definitely going to be that point with all three of those guys, Bolton, Smith, and Creed Humphrey, and we'll see what that point is and whether the Chiefs can make it work with more than one of them. Maybe I can't see all three of them walking, mm-hmm. but who knows? It's too early to make that determination yet.
Would they value Creed over Trey? Is it simplistic as Creed could play center, but also could slide to guard if need be, whereas Trey Smith is a guard?
Yeah, they're both great players. Yeah. It might come down to you play both off the one off the other, and whoever takes the offer yeah. first, you know, it might come down to that, really. You know, and that's happened before in certain cases. So, you know, I'd hate to be the one who has to make that choice. Yeah. I like both those guys, and I think both those guys are winners, and more than just that they played on championship teams. I think they contributed to this team being a championship team. So you hate to lose those guys, but I'd be okay with either one. If you can keep yeah. one of them, I think you've had a good day. If you're asking me who I'd keep, I'd probably keep Creed Humphrey, but mm-hmm. I certainly would not consider Trey Smith any kind of consolation prize in that yeah. statement there.
So one of the reasons I asked about the emotional tie with Dayton Moore and some of the players there is the really cool storytelling and piece that was done by Tom Rinaldi with WrestleMania this past weekend mm-hmm. in Philadelphia, and the shooting that took place at the parade. And what Trey Smith did with Mike Borgonzi's son and giving him the championship belt and telling him you're the champ and calming him down. And that now relationship that's there between Trey Smith, the Borgonzi family, Borgonzi's son. They went to WrestleMania together over the weekend. They were there. He had the championship belt. They're still close. I bring up the personal connection because that's a little different than just having an affinity for somebody that helped you win a championship. That's somebody that's now a family friend and is personal. And Borgonzi does have a say in some of the decisions by the front office.
Yeah. Just, I would think if that's a major part of how the Chiefs are making their decisions, that would be a complete break from how they've done things mm-hmm. recently. So I just don't see it. I mean, I just don't see that being any kind of major factor here. Yeah. You know, maybe a tiebreaker or whatever, but mm-hmm. I think that decision is going to be based on many other factors that have nothing to do with yeah. What you just talked about yeah. there.
It was a really cool story, though.
There's no doubt. Yeah, mm-hmm. there's no doubt. And, you know, I think there's a lot of that going on with the Chiefs right now. They got mm-hmm. a lot of good guys, yeah. but some of them are walking out the door, yeah. you know, and that's just the way it's got to be.
Yep. Adam Teicher is our guest from ESPN. Is there commentary on Felix Anyedike Uzomah by bringing Mike Dana back? Is it a question of can he fill that role? Or, okay, the $24 million over 3 years and 13 guaranteed is good enough that even if FAU was succeeding and they felt like could fill that role, Dana still has a role on this team with FAU? Or do you maybe view it as you bring Dana back because there's still questions maybe from the Chiefs' perspective as to how effective FAU can be?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think that's a reasonable thing to ask, you know, what they think his future is and how much he can help him next year and beyond. So, yeah, I do think there is a that's a reasonable question. And, you know, I feel like we'll get the answer going forward, you know, once they get to camp, how FAU is being used and, you know, what the Chiefs, you know, are they giving him more than they were giving him toward the end of last season and all that? So, yeah, I think that is a legitimate concern. And if you're asking me, well, I mean, if they thought he was going to be a legitimate Karloftis type impact kind of guy, would they have re-signed Mike Dana? I still think they might have, given Dana's versatility you know, the injury. You know, then if you lose one of those three guys, you still got a couple good players. But you know, that is an interesting question, yeah. And we'll definitely, despite what the Chiefs might or might not say here over the next couple months, we'll get our answer for that once camp starts and they start doling out the playing time.
I lean towards they would still sign him even if they had great faith in FAU filling in and even if we put him in a Karloftis category, even though they're not the same player, but just for argument's sake, for this discussion, if they put him in that category of saying this guy is a starting defensive end, I think they still bring back Dana because, one, the value, the multi-position, and the injury with Charles Omenihu and the unknown of you know, when he'll return and how effective he'll be. I think he'll be fine. We've seen players return from ACLs and be fine. I think that, but there's still an unknown while he goes through the rehab process and making sure everything is good. That depth at that price is not bad at all. I mean, it's a good price. Yeah. So I think they would still bring him back even if they said, look, Mike, we know that you've been, you know, a starting defensive end at times. You've been a role player at times. You know what it is on this defense. You're very aware. You're going into this thing eyes wide open. And if we bring you back, it doesn't mean you're guaranteed a spot. Because if Omenihu's healthy or FAU is ready to step in, you go back to the role that maybe was there a couple of years ago behind Frank Clark and behind, I'm trying to think of, well, Chris Jones when they played him at defensive end, but Karloftis, you know, as well. But behind those guys, you start to become a role player, but it's still value for a role player of what the things Mike Dana can do. So I do think if they even had full confidence that FAU was a guy they feel like could start, the value in Mike Dana at that price is still really good.
Yeah, and I feel like even if FAU, you know, develops into a major part of your playing rotation this year, that he's a productive player, you're going to find room. They'll find room for Mike Dana. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to just sit on the bench. I mean, they'll find he's good enough player. Well, they'll find some things to do with him. And, you know, the other thing to think about is you mentioned Omenihu. He's on his last year of his contract anyway. Uh-huh. So, and he's making noise about wanting to get a big payday when he's done with this contract. Well, you know, that might have to happen somewhere else. Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to have all three of these guys, Karloftis, FAU, and Mike Dana under contract for beyond this year.
Adam Teicher from ESPN is our guest. He's presented by Twin Peaks. Enjoy your next lunch break with Twin Peaks. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Adam Teicher. We'll look ahead a little bit to the draft of what the offseason has, what has happened in the offseason. Is that an indication of what could come in a couple of weeks? We'll talk about that with Adam Teicher. More Zone right after this. Hanging out with Adam Teicher, ESPN. Chiefs Insider, presented by Twin Peaks. Enjoy your next lunch break with Twin Peaks. Talking with Adam. Adam, let's look ahead. 16 days from now, the Chiefs will be drafting in the football. Maybe. 16 days from now, the draft will go on. I do know that. There will be 32 picks selected in the first round, whether the Chiefs are one of those or not. Is there anything to glean or look ahead to predict based on the offseason signing so far? For instance, the question would be, they brought so many guys back on defense. is that an indication to you maybe they'll be focusing a little more on offense? What do you make of that question that may be out there of, okay, if we're looking at the Chiefs, maybe look more offensive-centric because now Mike Dana has returned?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at positional needs, I mean, wide receiver is definitely number one. And then the offensive line, I mean, they need to replenish. You know, they're not only, you know, maybe trying to replace Donovan Smith, but they also may be trying to replace Nick Allegretti and also replenish the pipeline in case they need to replace Creed Humphrey and or Trey Smith next year. So they've got a lot of work to do on the offensive line as well. So, yeah, I'd say that. I mean, this wide receiver thing has surprised me a little bit. I mean, you look at where the Chiefs are right now, and again, we're still fairly early in the offseason with the draft still to come. But, you know, you look at what they've lost from I think we'd all agree was a subpar wide receiving group last year, and they've lost 45 catches, which isn't a ton of catches to replace between MVS, who's gone, and Hardman and James, who are free agents still. They've lost 45 catches, and they replaced them with a guy who is caught 51 passes last year, Hollywood Brown with the Cardinals. So, yeah, I mean, that's not a great comparison here. But my point is, I figure that the Chiefs by this point would have done more to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is starting to remind me of what they did with the offensive line 2 years ago when they, you know, they signed Joe Tooney in free agency, and then they right before the draft, they traded for Orlando Brown, and then they, I guess that would be 3 years ago now, right? But they traded for Orlando Brown, and then they drafted Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, and they became immediate starters. So I'm wondering if that's what we're going to see here at wide receiver coming up here pretty soon, is a lot of resources being put into that. If you look at it that way, in 2000, what was it, 21, I guess, the Chiefs put their first-round pick, which they traded for Orlando Brown, their second-round pick, which they used on Creed Humphrey, and their, Trey Smith was what, sixth-round pick? So they used three picks, two premium picks on those positions. So I'm wondering if that's what we're going to see again with regard to the wide receiver position this year.
Do you think Brett Veach, for the most part, when he's gone into drafts, there's been a specific side of the ball, and he has focused a lot of his resources on the defensive side over the last 4 years or so, and he's having to rebuild the defense, so that would make sense that he has done that. He's mixed in, you know, Sky Moore and Rashee Rice and Wanya Morris in the third round, and obviously Clyde Edwards-Helaire, first round draft pick, and Creed Humphrey, you know, a center. But there have been a lot of the, you know, Juan Thornhill and Colin Saunders and Willie Gay and Legarius Sneed and Nick Bolton and Joshua Kando and McDuffie and Karloftis and Cook and Chanel and Williams and FAU and Shamari Connor. Like, they have spent a lot of resources on the defensive side. With where the defense is, is that a strategy you think the Chiefs will take moving forward, but now maybe focusing more on the offense? Or now that they've got the team to the point that it is, and yes, they have some spots that maybe they need to fill, but they can be more balanced, for lack of a better term, in their drafting over whether it's this year or the next couple of years? Or do you think there's that, hey, we've done the defensive work, we brought these guys back, we even brought Deion Bush back in case, we brought Drew Tranquil back offensively, we brought in Hollywood Brown, and that's about it, and a third tight end. So now the draft will be focused on the offense the way that it's been primarily focused on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, you look at where their roster is right now, and I think that's a reasonable expectation for this draft. And you also look at where the strength of this draft is. I mean, everybody tells you, offensive line and wide receiver, that's where you can get good players, maybe throughout the draft. So, it's not coincidence that that's what the case, or that the Chiefs at least feel that way in a year that that they've sort of had some attrition at those positions. I mean, I think that's, the fact they haven't gone out and spent at those positions is a pretty good clue that they feel like they can maybe get some help at those in those areas in the draft. So going to be interesting to see if they're right or not. But, yeah, I do think this will be one of those years where it, not just offense or defense, but certain positions. And I think running back is one of those. I think they still have a hole to fill in their depth chart. And I'm pretty confident they'll draft a running back at some point, too.
Yeah, I'd really like the Chiefs to get somebody that's got some speed to them in the running back room. So they got some guys that can break some tackles. But that quick burst, to get the ball and go. They had that with McKinnon a couple of years ago, especially late in the season, that year that they lost to the Bengals in the AFC Championship game. But he was really good down the stretch and was awesome in that Buffalo Bills game. And he had that burst, screen pass, boom, get it, quick start, where Edwards-Helaire and Pacheco were a little slower, out of the gates with their acceleration when they've got the ball in their hands, especially on the screen plays. Andy Reid does such a great job of designing those that I'd like to see a running back out there that can get the ball and quickly hit some top speed or get to the outside. I mean, they like to run these plays that go off tackle or outside, and they just don't have the personnel in the running back room right now to do that, because that's not what Edwards-Helaire Pacheco can do. I really want to see somebody in the running back room that's got some speed.
Well, I don't want to ruin your Christmas Day or anything like that here, Jason. But my sense is that's not the kind of guy they're looking for.
Well.
And that doesn't mean they won't be ended up picking a guy like that. But I sense more of a guy who can help them out in terms of being maybe one of these kick returners that you're going to need now. Hmm. Maybe a guy who can do that, because not sure other than the rugby star that they signed a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure they really have that kind of guy on their roster right now. I mean, what teams are going to be looking for in terms of a kickoff returner is different now than what it's been in the past. So I don't think a guy like Mecole Hardman or Richie James, I don't think that kind of guy's going to work anymore, or at least not what teams are looking for. So I think it's going to be more of a bigger type guy. But we'll see. I mean, maybe they just fall in love with a guy who they feel like they'll figure out the kick return thing somewhere else.
I would. I'd like the Chiefs to sign Jamal Agnew. If the kick return is going to be that big of a deal, it's going to be that important that you're thinking of specific players on the team that can fill that role. Well, he plays wide receiver as well, and he's, in his time, he's done the little gadget plays as a wide receiver, the quick throws down the line of scrimmage, the reverses, the ghost motion, the things like that that they get and they've used with Mecole Hardman and other players and tried to use with Sky Moore at times. But he's one of the best returners in football. And if the return is that big of a deal, and we know that Dave Tobe has his guys, the Dave Tobe guys at the end of the cutdown day, to me, it would make sense if you bring in one of the best kick returners if we're talking about a kick return every single time, the other team scores, or, we're not seeing these touchbacks that we saw this year.
Yeah. Well, hey, I can't say that he wouldn't work. Agnew wouldn't work as a guy who does that. But my sense is the Chiefs are looking for a bigger guy. That's going to be a different job than it's been in the past. And I think they're going to be looking, and most teams really are going to be looking for somebody who is built a little differently than Jamal Agnew is.
Last one for you, and as we get closer to the draft, do you think there'll be any more signings before the draft, or this is sort of the team they have, and you go into the draft, and then afterwards, like we saw Donovan Smith, and maybe that's where a J.K. Dobbins, if they don't end up with a running back or a tackle, do you think now it's sort of the holding pattern, see what you get in the draft, and then get back into free agency if you need to fill those holes?
Yeah, it's hard to say. A lot of times, teams think, well, we'll just wait for the draft and see if we can find somebody. And then they start looking at their draft board and thinking, oh, the guys we like at that particular position, there's no way they're going to be there when we pick. So we better do something. So, once they stack the board, they'll have a better idea of exactly where they stand in that regard. And, the players, sometimes, as we know, it takes two to make a deal, and maybe guys would get nervous, and they'll take a deal now or before the draft that they wouldn't otherwise. So I could see this going either way. I'm kind of surprised they haven't done more wide receivers. So that would be a position I would look for even before the draft. Bringing in a lower cost type guy who can help them out, because right now that depth chart doesn't look real solid.
Adam Teicher from ESPN Chiefs Insider. Adam, you're the man. Very much appreciate the time, sir. And congratulations on still being the most recent Big Ten champion at Michigan State.
I am about to take another sip of the champagne here.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk next week, bud.
All right. Good stuff. Talk to you then.
Absolutely. There's Adam Teicher from ESPN, a proud Michigan State Spartan, and still Michigan State, the most recent Big Ten champion in college basketball. He is presented by Twin Peaks. Step up your lunch game at Twin Peaks. Enjoy light yet hearty combos put together for you, available at an awesome price, featuring savory soups, crisp salads, and a variety of sandwiches to satisfy your every craving. Enjoy your next lunch break with Twin Peaks. We'll take a timeout, come back, wrap up this hour. We'll hang out with Les Norman coming up in the noon hour. More Zone next. All right, hanging out here on this Tuesday edition of The Zone. We'll talk with Les Norman coming up at noon. Then we'll get our Bracket of Sound winner in the 1 o'clock hour. Eliminate the other three teams that were at the Final Four. And then, of course, the winning team, the UConn Huskies. So that comes up in the 1 o'clock hour. 913-912-4810. I asked Adam Teicher this, and I think this is something that we'll be watching for and paying attention to, and it's a question that we'll wonder going into camp, is how much of a bringing back Mike Dana is a commentary on the faith or lack thereof by the Chiefs in FAU? Is there a connection at all, or is it that Dana offers versatility in playing multiple positions and depth with the injury to Charles Omenihu, that even if they look at it and go, FAU, he's going to be starting next year, we are confident he's going to fill in that role. He's going to be opposite GK, and it's going to be FAU and Karlaftis, and then Dana can fill in and Omenihu when he's healthy. And they brought back Malik Herring just in case, because that was an exclusive rights free agent anyway, so it made sense just to offer him league minimum, and he's required to sign it. But is there a commentary on FAU? I definitely think it's something to watch for in training camp, because I don't know the answer if FAU was ready to step in if Dana would be on this team at $24 million over 3 years with 13 guaranteed.
Well, I think what I said before Dana came back was, if it's a one-year deal, this is nothing about FAU. This is more or less Charles Omenihu being out most of the season. You needed more guys either way. If Dana was not here, you're going to bring in another veteran. That much, in my mind, was going to be set. But this is a three-year deal. Well, that makes it a little interesting. Is that saying you don't believe in Charles Omenihu going forward, and Mike Dana is going to be your veteran guy going forward, and he is not? Okay, I'll entertain it. But what does this say about FAU? Now, me personally, I don't judge last year. It's a redshirt year for me. I know folks wanted him to come in and be a stud, but I'm sitting here going, who was he going to play over? He wasn't playing over Karlaftis, who played amazing. He wasn't playing over Omenihu, who came on very strong late in the season. He wasn't playing over Mike Dana, who they trust inside and out. And he wasn't playing over Chris Jones when he kicks outside. So who are you taking off the field to put him in as a rookie? You're not. So people who are so upset by him not getting on the field, I go, they're trying to win a Super Bowl? This is not the Panthers who are trying to develop guys right now. They'll develop guys in OTAs and training camp and preseason. That's what they need to do. I have no judgment on FAU, who, by the way, was one of the youngest guys coming out of the draft. He was a completely different skill set than George Karlaftis, who was week one ready. FAU, we knew, was going to be a developmental dude. Now, if you want to talk about drafting developmental dudes in the first round, what if the Chiefs draft Rashee Rice in the first and FAU in the second? Would you have the same conversation? Like, I feel like we get so upset by everything not being perfect. Let's take a step back. Let's have some nuance. Say, was it slightly disappointing? Sure, but I don't think there's room for legitimate concern yet.
Bringing back Dana on a multi-year deal, with what you're talking about of FAU, where was he going to play last year? And I'm in complete agreement with that. Like, what spot is he going to play in? Who's he going to play over? If you want FAU to be in there, then you're taking, you know, you're not taking Chris Jones off the field. You're not taking Carl Loftus off the field. Are you taking Mike Dana off the field? Are you taking Charles Omenihu off the field to bring in FAU? Well, when there's injuries and there's an opportunity, I mean, FAU got a tackle for loss in the Super Bowl because he got an opportunity to be in there. So at least he shows there's talent, there's explosiveness to his game. He's got some ability. Can he find consistent ability? And his offseason last year was different with the injury. You mentioned that he's young. I push back a little bit on the young thing because Carl Loftus, it was a positive that he was young. Oh, Carl Loftus is so young, this is great. FAU, he's so young, so let's give him some time to develop.
They needed Carl Loftus game one.
I agree.
They were in a way worse spot the year prior.
They had
to draft a floor guy compared to a quote-unquote ceiling guy.
I'm with you. I just think using the Chiefs using the FAU as young, they're using the same thing when it suits them.
Sure.
George Karloftis is young. That's what makes him such a great prospect is how young he is. Well, FAU is young. That's what makes him more of a project is because he's young. Well, that's because Karloftis looked good from week one and FAU looks more like a project. So we can sort of use that and place that tag wherever we find it necessary. I'm not going to judge FAU on last year either because of what you said. But now this year, if that was the case last year, if Omenihu's healthy, it's the same situation. It's Karloftis and Dana and Omenihu and Chris Jones. So who are you taking off the field for FAU this year? So there should be an expected improvement. But if there's an expected improvement, okay, that's great. But now who's he playing over? Is he good enough to play over Omenihu? He's clearly not going to come off, take Chris Jones or Karloftis on the field. He shouldn't take those guys off the field. It's great depth. But the redshirt year is one thing. Now it's go time. And the multi-year deal for Dana, to me, might say more about Omenihu, who's on the last year of his contract. And you've got Dana for at least two more years, so Omenihu can walk after this year, and you still have George Karloftis, Mike Dana, and FAU, and you can find depth after that.
Well, and Mike Dana's contract is not one that, one, forces him to be a starter and does not handicap you in any way. If you look at edge rushers and their contracts they receive in today's NFL, it's absurd. A three-year, $24 million, guaranteed only $13 million. This is a great deal for Kansas City.
I agree.
I guess great for Mike Dana, you know, fifth-round draft pick, has not yet to have a lot of money. I get that. It's good for him, too. But based on what I think we all expected, we thought his market was going to be a little more bullish than this. So if you're Kansas City, you say 3 for 24, well, why would you not bring him back for that? That's a depth guy. That's a rotational guy. You're not paying him like an elite starter. So if FAU all of a sudden breaks out, well, sorry, Mike, we appreciate you. You're going back to your rotational role. It's not like edge rushers play 100% of the snaps. Max Crosby's the outlier. To an extent, George Karloftis is an outlier, how much he plays. You're going to have a rotation. I want as much depth as possible. I say two things in the NFL. Quarterback's most important, and how can you affect the quarterback is second most. Yeah. So having the edge rushers, you want depth.
I'll be honest, I was a little surprised, and we talked about this on the air, I was a little surprised that everybody thought Mike Dana's market would be as robust as people thought. And I know that he won a Super Bowl, and my point was, I think he's more valuable to the Chiefs than teams on the open market will view him. Because if you're on the open market and you go, okay, this guy had 17 sacks. Oh, in his four-year career, 17 as a defensive end? That's not going to get a lot of money in the open market. But the Chiefs view Mike Dana as someone that can play multiple spots. They see what he's done in this defense and the value there. Whereas I don't think teams would look at it and just go, yeah, he can play some different spots. But he's only got 6 sacks last year. How much money are we paying for 6 sacks? Clearly not a lot. But I'm glad the Chiefs got him for that money. Les Norman next.